Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, October 27th, 2019. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart? You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 385. I have a super special return guest, comedian, podcaster, writer, actor, Sarah Tolomash from the Vag Podcast, one of my favorite people in the world. I'm super excited to share this conversation with you. Before I'm gonna talk to you for a little bit. I have time. I'm gonna see Black and Blue in about an hour. Someone on Twitter asked me, I think it was J Full 940 914 on Twitter. He's like, "Are you gonna see Black and Blue?" I was like, "Of course I am. Like, what do you think? You know, I'm gonna see this movie. I know people have probably shitted on it. What's the Rotten Tomatoes score? I want to see. I don't give a shit, but I'm gonna see it anyway. 46%. Not that bad for a black movie opening in Oscar season. Not bad, but I think it's going to be fun. I've been doing these in the car interstitial mini episodes that I record on my phone, on my cell phone, and I've been uploading those. So maybe I'll do one after I watch Black and Blue. We'll see. You have to join Patreon to find out. But there's two people over there on the feed that like it, so I'm going to keep doing them. You get more content. You get me more of me blabbing into a microphone. Isn't that what you guys like? So I'm going to do that. And NBA TV is on mute. I'm glad the season's back. I haven't really been able to sit down and lock in and really enjoy any games. When I do, it's just kind of like it's just on, and then I'm watching it. Like, oh, this is fun. And then I just fall asleep because my schedule is so busy. I've gone through so much, you guys. So, but I'm glad it's back nonetheless. And super excited. Bummed that Zion Williamson is not playing because he's hurt and stuff. So that's a bummer. Bummer that KD's out. Bummer that Klay's out. But it's still going to be fun either way to enjoy NBA hoops. Really big, devastating news this week. Not only did we lose the great Elijah Cummings, but we lost. We got The Last of Us Part Two got pushed back a couple months, and you know, I kind of thought it would be too good to be true for that thing to be coming out on my birthday. Like, that was too perfect. That was just too perfect. And I'm bummed out. But now it's like I've got all these games that I haven't beaten yet. I need to beat God of War. I just bought Shadow of the Colossus. I've not beat Days Gone. I have not finished the expansion, the DLC for Horizon Zero Dawn. Uncharted Lost Legacy, I have not finished. I borrowed that from Brandon Collins. I had it so long, he didn't even know. He didn't even know I had it. So I gave that back to him when he was on the show. Speaking of Brandon Collins, he texted me like a day later after the news about The Last of Us 2 not being released in February got pushed back to May 20th. So he's like, "Did you hear about this?" And I was like, "Of course I did." It's like he was trying to rub it in. He wasn't rubbing it in because he's a gamer himself, but it was still like, Let me read this exchange. Let me find this shit. He writes, yeah, this is what he doesn't give a shit. Fuck him. I love him, but fuck him right here. So he messages me on Friday. He's like, sorry, bud. And he sends me a link that it got pushed back. And I said, I write back. I said, you don't think I know about this already? You don't think I know about this already? Then he writes back, just in case, ellipses. And then I write back, you thought you ruined my Friday. Wow, Brandon. And he writes back, ah ha ha. I wanted you to know so you could plan accordingly. You sounded so excited that it was being released on your B-day. I was like, yes, it was very excited that it was coming on my birthday. And I tell him I got to finish these other fucking games. But yeah, I'm disappointed. I have next week on the show, I'm going to have Tajay Moment, who is a YouTuber and gamer, also college student, who is a really big fan of The Last of Us. And I found out about him on YouTube and all the cool videos that he's been posting about it. And that's going to be with you guys next week. And he's bummed out. I kind of want to do an addendum to our conversation because we just talked about theories and stuff. And it was really fun. I'm super excited to share it. I'll say it again when I put the episode up in the intro, but it's going to be one of the most inside baseball episodes ever. Like you know, when you listen to comedians talk, yeah, we talk about comedy and shit like that. But I don't think I've nerded that hard about video games since the Mike Brown episodes. When Mike Brown was first on the podcast. Then we talked a little bit over on the Patreon maybe a year or two ago. And then we kind of get into it a little bit with the last conversation that we had, but not as much as I would have liked. But yeah, I think that's probably the most interesting and video game conversations that I've had on the show with another guest. So yeah, I'm bummed out about that. So it's coming out in May. So my plan of attack is going to change. And maybe if I get Tajay on the show, we'll talk about that, the changes that we might have to make. I think what's going to happen now, I still got the pre-ordered the collector's edition from Best Buy with the Ellie statue. And then, so that's going to be on opening day. I'll probably still take opening day off. But what I'll do now is I'll probably have to digitally download it because I can't talk about what anyway. But I'll probably have to digitally download it and play it at night. So that's going to be that. I want to give you a couple music reviews, recommendations rather, and then we'll take you to Sarah. Okay, so Gallant has a new album out, his sophomore album called Sweet Insomnia, that came out last Friday, a couple days ago, and my God, I really love it. I love this guy. This is like kind of when I was talking a couple years ago about how I really feel like this, some of these singers now, quite a few of the guys, they're like, they sing like they don't give a shit about what they're singing about. And so Gallant to me, you know, how they're this guy, like Gallant sings like he gives a shit about, about what he's talking about. And, with this one, the first album he had, Ology, it was really good. It was like, you just think about how you think about if this is kind of a blanket statement, but this is like if the Sky Zoo that we know is a singer. If Sky Zoo was a singer, he'd kind of be like Gallant, who's like this really dense poetry that's really interesting, talented delivery. If you've never heard about Gallant, I want to say I found out about him through Brandon from Where's My 40 Acres, because he posted something about it on Facebook, and I think he had this appearance on Fallon, and I was like, oh shit, this kid is great, and he's also from Maryland, from Columbia, Maryland, via Baltimore. He's really talented. This project, Sweet Insomnia, is just like really, it's just like there's no fat on this at all. It's really smooth. It's solid. I feel like this guy has this amazing range, and he's terrific. It just feels like he's honed in. He's like he's harnessed his power and just kind of releases it in all the right places, if that makes any sense. Like when he just, it's just like he just doesn't overwhelm you with it, but he's terrific. The songs are tight. There's no clunkers. It's only 35 minutes. It's 13 tracks. Interesting lyrics where he says he's got this record where he's talking to, I think it's called Panasonic, and he's talking about how he paid more attention to his Sega Saturn than his girlfriend or something. I don't know. It's interesting. I thought that was funny. Let me try to find them. I'm blabbing way too much for this intro, and I promise I gotta get you to Sarah. I just think it's really cool. Is that the record? Yeah, my. Do you know what it's like to wake up to dead silence in these halls when the other people run around in circles to applause? Yeah, my girl left me because I didn't show her as much love as my Sega Saturn. I'm sorry for rambling, but yeah, that's Panasonic. It's a dope record. Like this kid is the shit. And part of me is kind of like, no, he's dope. And he just so happens to be from Maryland. I didn't know that when I first heard the guy sing. So I'm really digging this guy. Really tight, on point album. And then he did this record. Is this on his? I want to make sure this is on. He did this record called Compromise. And it's features Sabrina Claudio. And she's a singer-songwriter from Miami. And she's dope. And I watched the video. She is beautiful. She's like one of those beautiful women that's like, oh, and you sing? Oh, my God. When I was on in the conversation with the homie D Lemon, we were talking about these girls, these artists, and guys do it too, but it's just like a lot of these women, these male singers do it too, but like there's something about like these women that they all sound good, and but it's almost like you can't really differentiate them between each other. They all sound good, they're all beautiful. And he called it like baby hair music. Lemon did. And it's so funny. But this girl, Sabrina Claudio, is just, she's a great singer songwriter. She doesn't seem to take herself too seriously, because I saw and went through like a mini YouTube dive where I was looking up Gallant videos and interviews. And then I watched an interview that, he and Sabrina interviewed each other, and they were on tour together. He was opening for her on a run of shows, and they were talking. It seems like she's like a cute girl. She's hot, but she doesn't seem like she's like an asshole. She just seems like she's fun and doesn't really take herself too seriously. Because she said, you know, I know my music is kind of like you just want to sit in a tub and drink wine or just like kind of chill. And sit on the couch. It's definitely a vibe to her shit. She doesn't have like a lot of, from what I've heard on the new album that she's got, the truth is, it didn't seem like it's like, it's in a mood. It's almost like one of those records that you listen to, this one at least, when you're, for me as a comic, like driving home from some shows, mellowing out, vibing out, and she's sultry. I mean, she's really hot. And she's a good singer too. Don't cancel me, guys. I like that. And I can give you another one. Let's talk a little bit about Anna Wise, and then I promise you can fast forward through the shit if you want. I don't care, as long as you listen to the fucking pod. This is Anna Wise's latest album is called As If It Were Forever, and it came out came out on the 18th of this month. And I'm a big Anna Wise fan. I found out about her when she was in this band. I found out about her before Kendrick. I want to say I did, and I feel like I did. Around 2012, before she was on Good Kid, Mad City, she was in this band called Sunny Moon with this guy named Dane Orr, and they kind of had like this electronic thing. Like Groove Theory, but with a white guy and a white girl. And then their beats were a little more electronic and experimental. And then she's always done like her side solo stuff. She's done vocals with The Cunning Linguist. She's done stuff obviously with Kendrick. She won a Grammy, I believe. You can look that up, nerds. But she's a terrific singer-songwriter. I saw her live. I talked to her for a little bit. Just nerd. I didn't like try to holler at her or anything. I was just like, I like your music. But I wasn't a fan, but I just said, I like your music. You're dope. She's really nice. Really nice. I think she's like in that class of people, that handful of people that I really appreciate, like that went to Berklee School of Music. And I don't think they finished, and they just let, I don't know about that, but they went to Berklee School of Music and were dope. Like, I know St. Vincent did it. She's one of my favorites. Anna Wise, Nick Hakim. And I don't know if Dane Orr did or not, but Nick Hakim, a lot of his stuff was maybe a record of his was featured on Insecure. You can look Nick Hakim up, and I'm sure I've talked about him on the show. She's got a record that, that Nick Hakim co-wrote, I think it's called Nerve, and Anna Wise's partner John Bapp co-wrote that song. They did this album together called Geo Variants that I listened to while I was playing Madden. It's weird. It was just like it's kind of all over the place. It's just like really ambient, and yeah, they were making like they were kind of singing on it, but it didn't start to get good until they both started fucking singing on the song, and it was fucking beautiful. It's like you're hearing all this ambient stuff and these weird titles, and then the last record is called Nova, and they're both singing, and it's like, well, fuck, why didn't you guys do this the whole time? You know, I'm not shitting on, but it's like, okay, all right, well, you guys are fucking great together. I see why you're together and you got a kid now. But it's like, give us more Nova than some of this other stuff. But Anna Wise is dope. She's been dope for a long time. And I guess this is her proper album. I mean, she had like two other projects, the Feminine Act 1 and 2. And she's done like some Lucy's for and stuff like that. But I really like her. I want to say if there's a record called Asleep, and I found out, I think that might have been the first song of hers that I heard, and it's on this album called Just Visiting by Anthony Valadez, and it's the first record on that project. It's got that like that electronic vibe to it. It was kind of like how What I was introduced from Plug Research when Bilal did Airtight's Revenge in like that might have been like 2007 or 2008 when that came out. It was like kind of like he was the first person I was like, oh, so these other people on the label, they do kind of like experimental stuff. And that's probably, God, I want to say that might be one of my favorite soul records in a long time, within the last 10 years or so. Airtight's Revenge, it's got like Bilal was just fucking next level on that. But yeah, so I kind of found out about her through that. And yeah, she's terrific. Sabrina Claudio is great. Gallant, terrific Maryland guy. So I've blabbed so much more than I thought I would. I need to put some clothes on and go see this Black and Blue. And why don't you, as you're doing what you need to do as a human being in this world, why don't you enjoy the great Sarah Tolomash and Yours Truly Talk? I love Sarah. Sarah, what more can I say? She's been on Colbert. She's been on Corden. She's been on like Adam Devine's House Party. Terrific comic. The thing that I did that I hate when like my parent, my mom or like relatives will try to give, it's not really advice, but it's just like, and I call myself out on it. I was like, well, why? I really think personally as a fan of other people, of other artists, like I think that Sarah will be really fucking good as an actor, as just a straight actor, but I'm very comedic. She could, I think she could, I love this girl. She's dope and she's really talented. And just enjoy this conversation. Me and Sarah Tolomash. All right. Yeah. So I think now for me, it's kind of weird because you think about all these new apps coming out with like the Disney and the Apple TV Plus.
And Quibi.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's another one.
I know. I was just thinking, and then ITV, Apple TV.
Yeah.
They have a new show with Jennifer Aniston and Reese where you're like, those are big stars, but who's watching that? Even though I am a member of, you know, or Apple or whatever it is.
Okay. Well, see, I would want to see that. Like, that would be the main reason for me to get that would be because of that show, the Good Morning, whatever the fuck.
Yeah. Well, I'm assuming you can just watch it if you have an iTunes account, right?
I guess, but isn't iTunes gone now?
Well, it's a, like a streaming service. So I pay, I think it's either $5.99 or $9.99, somewhere between those.
Okay.
And you can have as much music as you want, but there's still some bands that don't show up on iTunes.
Yeah, it's all crock of shit. I don't know. Like I still have cable, and I was just talking to Damian Lemon on his podcast about that. Like, just it's hard for me to cut the cord because I don't know when you were growing up. I mean we're around the same age, so I feel like when I got cable, it's I've paid, you know, and when it came time for me, I've had it since I was a kid, even when it's a struggle to pay for, it's like, do I really want to get rid of this?
I know. Cause well, now I just do HBO on demand.
You do.
So we don't have HBO channels. We just do the demand so I can just see their programming.
So like when you want to watch, Succession or whatever,
I have to wait till it airs and then they put it up.
Okay. Yeah, I need
but
to get
usually
go ahead.
Oh, sorry, but I was like saying usually they put it up right away, so by the time I get home, which is around midnight, it's already up on the menu, so I can watch it almost the same night that everybody else is watching it.
Okay, because these days people just spoil the shit out of stuff.
I know, you can't get on. When Game of Thrones was happening, I had to stay away from Twitter until I saw the episode.
Yeah, it's brutal. Like, there's a show on Stars called Power in the Black community, Sarah.
Cheadle?
No, that's the Showtime show. That's Black Monday. But it's just a mediocre. Fuck it. It's a guilty pleasure for a lot of people. There's some people.
Oh, yeah.
There's some people, it's just a soap. It's really a nighttime soap with like a lot of violence in it. And
that's what Empire was, right?
It's more violent than Empire.
Oh, yeah. But I always thought Empire was like a soap opera.
It is. I mean, damn near all of them are. But like that show will come on, like if you have the app or you do it on demand, it comes on Sundays, and that after midnight, it's already up. So if you turn on Twitter and you log on to Twitter, people are spoiling that shit right away. So
yeah,
it's kind of like, I mean, Damian called it like Sunday service. Like you watch Power as soon as you get up. So yeah, nobody spoils that shit. And it's true. And like, it's just, it's hard. There's only a few that people spoil. It seems like, because if you have a day job or you're around certain people, the people at my job don't really, they're not spoiling anything, you know?
No, not really.
Yeah, they don't really talk about, there's like a couple people that I talk about TV with, and it's not that much on a regular basis, so it's just kind of like, all right, nobody's gonna spoil this.
Yeah.
But I know. Go ahead.
I was just saying, sometimes I don't, you know, like for movies, sometimes I don't mind if they spoil it. I'm like, I'm gonna watch it anyway, and if it's a scary movie, I kind of want to know what to expect.
That's true. Yeah, nobody really spoils movies that much. I'd usually just check in the Facebook every time I go see something for the most part. And people are, oh, how was it? What, blah, blah, blah. I was like, I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'm not going to tell you, you know?
Yeah.
But I was thinking about this Apple TV. If I get the Apple TV device, the guy was telling me I could get the Apple TV Plus for free for a whole year.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's like $200.
I don't know. You know, it's just like, it's so hard now with all these subscription services that it feels like we're paying more.
We are.
Than our package deals that we would get when we would, and then you could just DVR it instead of doing on the demand. So
yeah,
every now and then, like lately, I've been thinking about canceling Netflix just because I haven't really been seeing much on there that I enjoy. And I'd like to check out, I don't know, get Showtime on demand or something.
It seems like with the premium cable channels, as soon as something goes off, like a Game of Thrones or Succession, it's like, okay, I'm going to cancel it. But then there's something new that's always coming up right behind it that makes you want to keep it. And it's just like, Jesus Christ, I don't know. And it's our business. It's our, you know, we got to know what's going on.
Then you should tax write it off. That'll be one way to save. You can write it off as a tax deduction.
And I think I do that. My accountant at H&R Block, she takes care of it. Like, I hope, I haven't been audited yet, so I don't think I'm doing anything bad. So
no, and then I think they usually go after people that are making a ton of money that aren't claiming a lot.
I'm not making some. Sometimes I have to pay a little bit back, but it's not that much.
Yeah, but it is research and development, and you get joke ideas from it, and I kind of can come up with sketches that way.
Yeah,
that it does influence. So I do feel like it's part of what we need to do.
Yeah,
to know what's going on. So either that way we realize. Know that we're not regurgitating the same ideas.
Right. Because you don't want to be making like references and they're outdated, like talking about like Britney Spears, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you got to know who Megan Thee Stallion is or
and knowing the tropes. Like, yeah. How many movie trailers have we seen where the song that they play throughout the trailer is a slow version that's sexy and creepy of a popular 1980s hit.
What's the song with the new Terminator movie coming out? I'm going hunting. Have you heard that? Have you seen that trailer?
I've only seen it, but I didn't pay attention to the song. But I just know that a lot of movie trailers, especially if they're like thrillers or an eerie movie, they take a popular song of maybe like, it'd be like, say, taking like Bye 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 by NSYNC and then slowing it down and it sounds creepy.
I'm doing this tonight. You probably want to start a fight.
I know. I've been wanting to do a sketch where you think of the cheesiest songs to slow down as the song to play throughout a trailer.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, you could have a lot of fun with that.
Because that is a trope that you see a lot.
Yeah, it is. It is. It definitely is.
The other one, too, like when you watch a lot of movies, doesn't it make you cringe when the dialogue has a joke that we've all been doing for 20 years?
You're like, ew.
It's just where you're like, do you guys not watch stand up or keep track of what's funny? It's so cringing, cringeworthy to watch something that incorporates a cheese ball joke, like something we talk, like making fun of people with gluten allergies, where you're just like, yeah, we were kind of, everybody was making fun of that like 10 or 15 years ago.
That was in Big Mouth, the latest season of Big Mouth. I mean, they're dealing with kids in junior high, so that makes sense. But
yeah, that works in that world. But yeah. I'm just thinking of like in a rom-com.
Yes, or... actually, I'll give you one. I saw that Adam Devine movie, Jexy.
Yeah.
Which I liked, and I recommend. It's very, it's cute, and it's like very pleasant. But the premise is this guy, Adam Devine's character, is just obsessed with his phone. His phone breaks and he gets a new one, and the AI in the phone becomes like a life coach for him and makes his life better. But then she gets up. The phone is like a Siri type. Her name's Jexy. Then she becomes obsessed with him. And
that's kind of a fun premise.
Yeah. And she kind of fucks up his shit once she falls in love with him. And then there's like this bit about him charging her. She's like, oh, now charge me. Now take it out. Now put it back in. You know, she's like, oh, my God. Oh. And it's like, yeah, I get that.
But I know. How it is. I don't understand. Like, I feel bad for some of these actors that have to deliver these lines.
Yeah. I mean, I guess within the world of the film or the play or the TV show, it's like, yeah, I guess this works. But it is hard because you think maybe they shot that a year and a half, 2 years ago.
That is true. And things change really fast.
Yeah.
Things become, trends come and go.
Because there's another one about a phone. I think it's called Countdown, which is like, it might be like one of those Blumhouse movies that we like. You know,
oh, I love Blumhouse movies.
And it's like you get this phone and it tells you when you're, it's basically Final Destination with a cell phone.
I saw that in the trailer and I really wanted to, I saw that in the movie theater, like the trailer for it, and I really wanted to see it.
Yeah, it'll probably be out this month, I'm assuming.
Maybe I'll watch that for next week because I like watching scary movies before Halloween.
Okay. Do you have a routine when you're on the road? Do you watch movies when you're on the road?
Yeah. Well, Joe likes movies. And then when you're on the road, movies are like half the price they are outside of, like,
yes.
Manhattan movies are like $16. And then when we were in Appleton, Wisconsin, it was $7.
So you guys bought out the concession stand probably.
Yeah. And then there's nothing else to do. So you're like, well, let's just go watch movies. So I really enjoy that aspect. So we saw Judy.
And you like that, right?
Joker. Judy, I thought Renee Zellweger, really good. And then the storyline had me bored. I always realize when I find a movie boring, I find my mind drifting and thinking about what I'm going to do for my day.
Yeah.
And that movie did that a lot. Like, I just didn't think it was as captivating. Or I also felt like it lacked a lot of knowledge or, like, I think I would have preferred an actual biopic. This was a little bit different than a biopic.
It was just like at a certain stage, her toward the end of her career, kind of trying to make a comeback.
Yeah. Well, I saw that it was based on a play, so it looked like they only just focused on the last few months or year of her life before she died.
Yeah.
Some minor flashbacks, but you hear stories about her life that I find more fascinating than what she went through. I'm assuming that this movie was more of a character development rather than like a storyline.
I'm kind of losing you a little bit here, Sarah. It sounds like you're fizzling out.
Okay.
Hold on.
Okay.
It sounds like you're like it. maybe this phone is too close to the.
I'm using my earbud speakers.
I can hear you now. It just sounded like it's not you. It's okay. Probably this stupid fucking. Oh, let's see. Let me put on the. I don't know what the hell's going on here. Freaking techno, but I can hear you.
I know. Okay, well that's good.
I was just noticing some like
the level. Buzzing.
Yeah. Maybe Jesus Christ. Maybe it's maybe that's just how it is. Jesus Christ. I hate this.
That's all right. Fucking, I don't have anything planned today.
Fucking technology. You don't have any spots tonight?
I don't. Not tonight or tomorrow. And I'm like, I'm so excited. I haven't felt like I've had an actual weekend like a normal person in a long time.
It's good, though. Like, sometimes I feel like I love to do shows on the weekend because sometimes it's like I'm like working with Brett Ernst at Bananas. And it's Bananas is like right down the street from me. And it's like, oh, that's perfect. And
yeah,
you know, like working all week, like when you can probably attest to this, but I want to talk to you about this, but like sometimes it's like, oh yeah, I can do some comedy tonight. So it's like, yes,
yeah,
you know, so it's just kind of like, when you work that grind is like, oh God. And then when you get to the club, it's just like, do I even know how to do comedy anymore?
I think that all the time. And then you're running around, like I had 4 spots last night and they were all like not in convenient location, so I was just zigzagging all over this city.
Talk about that, because like I feel what I appreciate about you and Adrian and your podcast is the fact that, which is Vag by the way, I feel like you the two of you break the fourth wall with what it means to be a real stand-up comedian. Where,
oh, thank you. We're just trying to keep it simple for ourselves, so we don't hide anything.
Yeah, it's you're very like you're very transparent. Where it's like, yeah, I did this, it didn't go well, and you know, or I made him laugh because it's obvious that both of you are terrific comics, but it's like, yeah, this didn't go well, and you've been on television and stuff like that. You've been around the world and everything, but it's just go ahead.
Oh, doesn't it just feel like everybody's killing except you? Meaning, like, you're just watching people consistently do well, and you're like, we've got to be bombing just as much as other people. Like, I do well, I would say 80 to 90% of the time, maybe I feel pretty confident to go up. But, man, there are certain spots and certain clubs or whatever in the country that you just do it, and you're like, I'm not for you, and you're not for me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you're more well traveled than I am, and I think you've been in the game longer. You what, almost close to 20 years, right?
Yeah, close. Yeah.
Yeah, see, I'm just at 10. I'm in fifth grade.
Yeah.
So
it takes a long time.
Yeah, it does, and it's. I feel like because like not only is it the success fail ratio, it's the fact that I need to pay my bills, or I took this job, because a lot of like there's comics, there's a buddy of mine in LA that'll say like there's comics in LA that try to act like they don't have a day job, or how are you making money if you're doing stand up and you're not like on TV or you're not on a TV show? What are you doing to like sustain yourself?
Yeah, and they never share that information, which is so frustrating because you'll have, you know, your friends and then you're like, huh, that's a really expensive sweater. And
that's hilarious.
A lot of those. And you live in the city. And I think I only see you doing the road maybe once a month, if then. And then you only work one or two clubs.
Yeah.
In the city for spot pay, there's no way you're making rent and bills and your lavish lifestyles that
yeah.
I just I we're all like banging our heads against the wall. I wish people would be a little bit honest, but I understand the whole faking it till you make it.
Yeah, somebody told me not to talk about my day job and my act, but that's the stuff that's connecting with people the most is when, like, you're talking about your personal stuff, relationship stuff, all that, but, like, trying to make money or being broke or worried about money, where your money's coming from, it's like that stuff kind of – that hits really hard with people. Like,
yeah, and yeah, it sucks right now.
Yeah, and I think it's – Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying that we're not making – I just feel like a lot of people aren't making that much money.
Yeah. I was at the club last night, and I was asking them. I said, do you guys worry about money at all? And people like – some were like, yeah. And then somebody said, no. I was like, oh, you're just living it up here in Hasbrook Heights in a hotel conference room. So I guess you're getting extra cheese on your pizza. Huh? All right. No worries for this guy.
Avocado on the side.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. So, like, what do you, like, because I feel like you're a soldier in the game. Like, so what is it like on an average night? What was last night like for you doing those four spots?
Well, you're always grateful that you're getting work.
Right.
But one of them was I worked at a rehab, and I've done this several times, and I'm doing stand up in a little living room with no mic for two people that are either coming off alcohol dependency or, you know, heroin or pills or whatever.
Wow.
And it's so awkward, but it pays the most for the night. It gave me $100.
Nice.
So I just do it. And then I'm like, I'll just work on some new and then try to connect on more of a personal level.
Yeah.
And fix my set so that it's not inappropriate for people that are going through some hard times.
Yeah.
And then I did three New York Comedy Club spots, and then weekend spots. It's great because it's full and a lot of people are great, but with more people, there's a high chance that you're going to get some rude people. And so sometimes I find those shows to be work where you want to work on new, but you know that it's a Friday night, people paid money, and you just want to kill and get off the stage and go to your next set. And I don't want to derail my set because there's people just talking. Last night, there were girls taking selfies.
Ugh.
And you just have to barrel through that and just be like, all right, hope that you have a good show, and then you move on to the next. And then if not, try a new tag or try a new bit and see how it's going, if it's going well.
Do you think sometimes, though, like, you just, I got to get this new one off for me?
Yes.
Okay. And how do you approach that even when you're faced with these assholes taking selfies? And
I kind of talk over, or I move my body to another part of the audience so I don't, kind of like you're shunning them.
Yeah, sure.
Well, there was a guy yesterday that I found quite intimidating in the front row, and he kept saying little comments, but not enough for me to say anything.
What was he doing that was making himself be intimidating?
Like making faces, kind of like a rolling his eyes situation.
Mm.
I think he did laugh, so it wasn't like he was not enjoying it, but I just didn't feel like I needed extra physical commentary.
Yeah.
From the guy, because it ruins my mojo. I feel like I'm very vulnerable up on stage, that if it's not going right, I'm just like, fuck, I hate this.
And that's the thing. I think you're touching on something that's really important. When you're up there, you are vulnerable because your act is you. It's not like you're like you can hit with a lot of jokes in a short amount of time, but it's still you. Like you're just like, it's not, I don't want to say an open wound, but it's like you're open because you're exposing yourself. You're talking about your life. And I think stylistically, that's something that I'm drawn to, because I like to do the same thing, but I'm more like long-winded about the shit and you're more like precise. So it's like what I like about that. So like, and it is something different where it's like with acting, it's like if they don't like my acting, if they don't like that character, it's just a character. It's not me. It's like, and like that's the thing that I always have to struggle with stand up, where it's like, well, they don't like my act, these jokes. They don't fucking like me. And then
exactly.
And then that's,
and it feels like that. You're like, these are my thoughts. And then when they're like, you're weird.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Then you feel weird about it. I don't know. I'm going to therapy for it right now, of just how brutal it can be. It's like we're cutting ourselves sometimes.
And yeah,
I'm not emotionally prepared for some of, like, you know, I'm better now than I was years ago, but it's not making it enjoyable sometimes. Where the times I like being on stage is your Sunday through Thursday shows. Mm. It's a smaller audience. There's a lower pressure.
Yeah.
And then I find myself doing, I just find it more enjoyable, where like the Friday and Saturday, when you're just dealing with the general public, I'm just like, this is not fun.
Yeah, I kind of struggle sometimes with anxiety when shows, like, because I don't do all the clubs that much, but like I was opening for Paul Verzey late last month, and I noticed, like, and that was my first weekend working there, like doing a full weekend opening for somebody. And I had like a level of anxiety there too. And there was one point, I think it was the second show, I think I might have told you guys on your podcast, where I said something, I just made a reference, and I was like, shut the fuck up. And I was like, oh God. And then I just went on with my, and it was fine, and the set was okay, but there was just like, I want to do well, I'm opening for my friend, there's a lot of people here, and it's just like, I just want to get off stage. It's like, I just want to land the fucking plane. And it's just like, ah. And what is that? It's like, it's, this shit is supposed to be fun.
And it can't, it is. It's just Friday and Saturday for me cannot, sometimes it just feels like work, and I feel like I'm not living in the moment on those nights.
Yeah.
Where the other nights, I feel a little bit more relaxed. I feel like no one's watching me that matter, or like club bookers, you know, and people know that during the week you're kind of working out material because the spot pay is not as big as the weekend spot pay. And so I just feel like I can really be myself, and like, if something doesn't work, it's fine. I move on to the next and we're all enjoying ourselves. But like Friday and Saturday, all I'm thinking about is I can't wait till I get off stage.
What about, no, so how did you deal with this guy last night, this intimidating guy?
I just talked over him.
Mm-hmm.
I change my, sometimes if I notice that if they're getting a little talkative, when I start up the next joke, I spike my voice up as just a way to cut through a little bit, and then I bring it back down. And then sometimes I move my body language. I try not to look at that person because I don't want them affecting my energy.
Yeah.
It's like we've all been in hangs before, when there's somebody that comes to the hang that's newish and you just don't like their vibe and you're like, this sucks. That's how a bad audience member can be sometimes.
Yeah. When you were first starting, like, what made you, I kind of always ask you, you did a Patreon episode. We did Thoroughbreds last year. Was it last year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And we were talking mainly about movies and stuff. But when you started, what was it like for you when you first got into stand up? How do you feel like you've evolved?
Well, I definitely feel like I know my rhythm now, which is probably the same as knowing your voice a little bit.
Sure.
And that just comes from doing lots of spots where, like, I started in Houston, where you're not going up all the time. You did a mic once or twice a week, and then you would hope for a showcase show once a month.
Right.
With maybe like emceeing or featuring once a month. So you're not doing lots of spots. Like, you're probably averaging 10 a month.
Did that make the stakes higher though?
Not really.
Really? Okay.
Just because it's a very small pool, so if you're somewhat decent, it's not going to take away. It's just as long as they know that you're, like, trying to get better.
Got you.
And then when you're starting out, there's something that I kind of missed about starting out. I think you take bigger risks.
I think you're right, yeah.
Because you don't know where you are. Throwing stuff to the wall just to figure it out. Where sometimes I wish I had that kind of like ignorance or naivete, is that what it, how sure. it's pronounced? Being yeah. naive, just being like, I don't know, we'll figure if this works. Where now you're like, should I be doing this dirty joke? Am I above that? Or are people going to judge me? Where I feel like, are there comics or like, is, I don't know, I get self-conscious of like, is that, can I do that? Or
I'm the same way. Look, I just had a buddy who's in the music industry. He texted me like Thursday afternoon. He's like, he went up at Stress Factory in Bridgeport? And he did the open mic and he fucking killed. And he had this joke about that was like just about him being a big guy and his woman being a big, and they were, it was like a really funny joke. She's like, oh, I want to sit on your face. And he said, I got sleep apnea. And it was just like, you're going to fucking kill me. I was like, what the fuck? That's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, like, and he just like, just, that was one of the bits of, and I say, you got to try to, I was like, keep that sleep apnea bit. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that is hilarious. But yeah, I just think you take bigger swings when you're starting out because you just don't know what you are yet.
Yeah. I had a joke that didn't go well last week where I was trying to do this bit about like one of my favorite white actresses saying the N-word in a movie and how it like just kind of hurt me. And it just kind of didn't go over well. And I was just like, well, it'll be funny in a couple weeks.
And yeah, or like you bring it back a year later.
Yeah.
I've had bits where when you're starting out, like you're like, I know this is funny, but then you do it on stage and it's not doing well. And then you try it out a few years later when you're more comfortable
with
how to deliver it, or like you maybe didn't have the chops at the time to do maybe more of a nuance of a joke. But now you can. That I would just bring it back.
Yeah, I'm going to work on, I'm starting to do more bar shows, trying to book more bar shows and just to really just flesh stuff out, cuz I've been trying to do an album for a couple years and stuff like show business stuff, acting stuff comes up and I really have to narrow something down, and I talked to a label person and I'm going to sort some things out. So I really need to make that happen because I'm at the point where I don't know if you feel like this, where like your material, like you like your, you know, the jokes are good, but you kind of get tired of them. Do you ever feel that way?
Yeah. And then you feel like comics are thinking, wow, she doesn't write that often. That's what I always worry about. So it puts like this weird stress of, you know, constantly having to come up with new bits. And then that whole trend of doing a new hour every year where you're just like, Jesus.
Yeah, are people still doing that? Trying to do that?
It feels like it. There's some comics. I just think, how the hell? You just did an hour.
Yeah.
And now you're doing another special. That's shorter. Then I'm like, where are you? I don't even have that many things to talk about.
Yeah, you got to kind of live a life worth commenting on.
Yeah.
I don't know how it gets done. I try to just pipe in some of the new stuff before it, but I just want to, because I don't even worry about the crowd. I worry about like the staff. Like oh, here comes Chris doing that bit about his dad. There he goes again, talking about that girl that broke up with him a couple years ago.
It's like, you just think that you're going to hear them while they're delivering jinx go, Oh, geez. This bit again?
Because it's like, yeah, you know, like when they see me, they're happy to see me. Like I would consider like Levity Live to be, even though it's gotten a little, well, I love that club. And it's gotten a little more corporate now because the improv runs it. And I'm not there that much. So, but when I was there a lot, I would be like, hey, I would tell some of the like security guys, did you hear the new bit? Doing some new shit tonight. You heard that, right? You heard it.
Yeah.
I'm working here, you know.
I know. It's just hard. You're always worried like what others are thinking. And then I just myself, nobody's paying attention.
That's kind of true, too.
Like when I'm watching a show, a lot of times I'm just on my phone the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I don't know.
I think you're cutting out again.
Am I cutting out again? I fucking hate this. Okay, let me see what's going on.
Cuts out.
Am I, because I feel like sometimes you cut out, then I cut out. Let me.
I know, I moved to a different part of the apartment just to see if that was better.
You sound perfect.
Okay, well now you sound perfect too.
Okay, maybe it's you, Sarah.
Maybe it's you.
I'm gonna blame you. So I'm just gonna blame.
Well, I got a new battery for my cell phone yesterday. So
what kind of phone do you have?
I have an iPhone.
Now let me ask you about that. Have you only had iPhones like within the past 5 to 10 years?
Yes.
Okay. Do you like them?
Yeah. They served me well. I don't know. I am jealous of the Samsung camera.
Oh, is there like a new one? I have a Note 9. Mine's about a year or two old.
Even that is probably better than, I know that the new iPhone has 3 lenses, so I'm thinking that it's getting better, but I just noticed Samsung and the Google one has better. They just have a better photo quality.
Yeah, those Google phones, that looks amazing. Someone had, it was a comic had one, maybe last year I was doing their podcast, and they're like, oh, they took a picture, and I was like, Jesus Christ, that looks amazing.
I know.
Yeah.
I like doing videos on my phone. It's just easier.
I liked your bit, well, I don't want you to burn it, but your bit about, well, you did it on TV. The bit that you had about like the iPhones and the type of class, like the class, it's almost like a caste system where it's like you're poor if you have a 7 and, or somebody has a 4 and you have a 7. Like, how did you get in here?
I'm
butchering your bit.
They look down upon you.
Yeah.
No, but it's the jest. But it does feel like that when you're, like, especially with the, because they changed the charger. So when you would ask for like, hey, does anybody have an iPhone 4 charger? And they're like, ew. It's like you showed up with lice or something.
These things cost $1,000 now.
I know. That's why yesterday, because I upgraded. I think my phone just did it automatically, but it killed my battery.
Mm.
And somebody had told me that you can replace the battery. And that was only $50. Rather than spending $1,000 on a new phone.
Yeah.
But you can do payment plans on them now. So it's almost like you're leasing phones.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, for me, thankfully, when I got this one, I think it was like, I traded in my old one and they knocked off a lot. And so it was like, it wasn't bad. It made me get this phone. So I'm not going to do anything else with it until it's time for me to get one.
A new one.
But I was kind of... Go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying that now that phones are so expensive, I'm trying to ride mine until it's dead.
Hell yeah. That's exactly what I want to do. But I'm kind of tempted. Like I think maybe sometime in the middle of next year, I was thinking about getting a MacBook. If you get one of those, you kind of have to have an iPhone, right?
Yeah, that's kind of one of the main reasons why I've stuck with the iPhone is because of I have a MacBook and they just synchronize. And once you're like, then they're not timed up right. As soon as one's dead, then they don't die at the same time.
So mm-hmm. you're just, yeah. Like, yeah.
Constantly in the You're trapped. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, it's hard to, I think I'm slowly getting to the point as I get older. I'll be 40 next year, in next February. Mm-hmm. And I think like I'm starting to care a lot less about stuff.
Yes. I'm going through that right now. Like, I'm not trying to buy anything to make myself happy because it doesn't make me happy.
Yeah.
It only does for like a week and then you kind of adjust to it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really excited about this video game coming out on my birthday. but like, that's like my 40th birthday. It's just so how much I've regressed as an adult. Like, I started collecting action figures occasionally, and I still play video games, mainly on the weekends, though. And then I, like, this game that's coming out, like, I pre-ordered it, and I'm taking that day off of work, and, like, it's going to be great. But I don't know if women all do that. I don't know that you all regress like that. Do you do stuff like that?
I'm trying to think. I do like playing video games, but only if it's like the old school Nintendo, but not often. I maybe buy like stickers
or
markers, or every now and then I like to go see what's going on at Hello Kitty.
What is that? Like, is it like a website or something?
No, it's a Sanrio, and it'd be Hello Kitty and some other characters, Choco Cat, and they were just these cute little Japanese cartoons that they would have neat little stationery and pens and pencil cases. So that's the kind of stuff that I probably get close to regressing with.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. I think the last 6 years, I just got back into playing video games. Like, usually it would just be once. It'd be like getting into football game, like Madden or NBA 2K. And then maybe,
I think that's fun, though.
It is fun.
I think that's better than looking at your phone and refreshing the same apps over and over again.
Yeah, I can get trapped into that sometimes, too.
Oh, it's horrible. I want to get out of it.
Why did her likes get more than mine? Like,
yeah, it's so stupid.
Yeah. I don't, and I'm starting not to even care about that anymore.
That's good, because it's destroying us. Like, I want to get that phone. I think iPhone's coming out with a new phone that doesn't have social media on it. It's just your email, text, music, and then phone calls.
I guess it's like a phone that our parents have.
Yes. It has a rotary dial.
They call, my parents are, my dad's 78 and my mom's 75, and they call apps, they call them abs. I got these new abs. I was like, oh my god.
Oh, that's so cute.
I love it, though, because they will it's like when they text you, it's just fucking adorable. It's just like,
yes,
I could be at work and I'm just, oh fuck, I love you too.
You figured it out.
Yeah. They'll send an emoji that doesn't go with the sentence that they sent, with the message they sent.
Yes. I love it.
I was like, oh my god. It's great. It's great. But then, you know, it's you try to get them to, I try to show them something on Netflix, or it's hard to be their tech person. Cause I don't live there, so it's, I was like, I have to wait till I get home. Cause we both have the same cable provider. We both have FiOS, so I could tell them like, oh, it's this channel, it's, you got to press this, and you know, so it's kind of, I know comics always have their bits about teaching their parents like iPhone,
it's terrific.
Like Tommy John again when he's talking about his mother. Oh my god, it's just like, yeah, that was the first one bit that I heard that really hit hard about like parents and fucking.
Oh, that's a really great. I miss his stand up. I wish he did more stand up.
Is he working on TV in TV now?
Yes.
Okay.
It was just, I think it ended up being financially more lucrative in the long run.
Yeah, yeah. How do you feel about that? Like, a lot of people, a lot of our colleagues are kind of getting into TV now. Like, it's, Is that something that you want to do? Like, if you had your pick, like, would you want to get off the road? Would you want to, like, do TV, like, narrative or writing for late night?
Well, my dream was, I had one dream. I wanted to do SNL, and I still want, but I kind of feel like that's out of reach. Part of Why? Me feels like, I don't know. It's like, you got to know somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I think mostly you're not going to get picked out of packets of 400.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Or even more. They did a portal this year where anybody could submit, and you're just like, you're just naive to think that they're actually picking somebody straight from that.
Yeah. I think you can act though. I think you can act too.
I want to act.
Cause you're,
actually, that's what I would want to do more.
I think that's how you would flirt. Like, you're, it's not to say that you're not a good writer. You're a great stand-up, but I think your acting would draw more people to your stand-up. Like if you got on a show, not, you know, I'm not, now this is me being your family member. Why don't you just why don't you just get on TV? Why don't you just get on a sitcom?
I know.
But it's like, just from somebody that knows, you know, that knows that world, it's like, yeah, you could kill on a show, like on a TV show.
Oh, I would love to, but no agent is, I have an agent and he sends me on auditions once a year.
Do you ever do like any acting classes at all?
I did a few, and I took improv for years, and then I occasionally, when I was on sketch, I would do some, but I'm trying to write stuff for myself and just put it on Instagram, because then at least I don't have to worry about depending on other people to choose me.
Yeah.
And I find that more satisfying, and then it just seems like if you do that, it will lead to something if you're doing it on a constant basis, like consistently putting out videos.
That's true. I need to do more of that. Like, I think I might have told you and Adrian, like, I got yelled at by a friend, you know, like, just saying, you need to write your own stuff, and you're worried about people picking you, and as he's like, you play too many video games, and as I was playing, and I really don't, but, like, as he was yelling at me, I was doing a gig that night. But as he was yelling at me, I had my PlayStation on and I was downloading Madden and NBA 2K. And I just felt like, fuck. And I did a show. Yeah. Like, I was working that weekend. But, like, then I was like, fuck that, man. I got to do stuff that I like doing. It's not hurting anybody. But I also need to write. I just fucking, I don't know. Like, there's so much in my brain that I want to distill. Like, I think I have like kernels of ideas, but I just probably, I just need to put them down.
And we talked about like wanting to do TV.
Yeah.
I just feel like I've written now I'm writing a second treatment, and you get notes from your manager that are just like conflicting from the notes that they gave you before. Mm-hmm. And then they change the tone of what you had done, and then you're just like, why am I taking notes from somebody that's never really sold a show, like a scripted show before? And then it just feels like it gets watered down, where right now what I really want to do is write a short 5-minute film and submit it to short film festivals.
Yeah,
I just feel like it's easier. You're not going to get as many notes from somebody, and it's on your terms, and you can just learn as you go, and you can film stuff on your phone now. That's right. Just as good. And I read the Duplass Brothers book.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it was quite inspiring of him being like, just make 5-minute films with your phone, with your buddies, because they had written a short film, got funding from their family, made it. Then they weren't really that into it. It didn't feel like what they were really all about, even though they spent so much money. And then one day they were so frustrated with the process of like just self-critiquing that one of the brothers came home and was like, fuck it, we're filming something today. And they just filmed, I think it was Mark Duplass leaving a voice message on a phone, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And they said it wasn't really like professional looking, but they filmed it the best that they could, and they submitted it to the Sundance Short Film Festival, and it got picked up. And then from there, that's when things started snowballing for them.
Yeah, because it's almost looked like they came out of nowhere, but then they that whole mumblecore era, like maybe 10 or 12 years ago, where like I was watching their stuff, like it's like the Puffy Chair was one of them. I remember that one. They had one called Bluebird that was maybe a couple years ago that was like all shot all in black and white. And
oh, I didn't see that one. I saw the one that I really liked was it My Sister's Brother or something?
What you're talking about. He hooks up with his sister's
sister. Or no, his hooks up with his girlfriend's sister, and then they get pregnant or something weird like that.
Yes. I've seen that.
I liked it because it was a storyline that you haven't seen, and I thought it was the way that they shot it was really well done and just mm-hmm. interesting. And I just thought those are movies you're like, oh, I could do something like that. It's just filmed in one location. It's
yes.
three actors. And I like that's the same reason why I like the Blumhouse films, is because he keeps it on a low budget, and right. they usually film in one location that you're like, this is doable.
Yeah, it's true. I went to see so this is probably like my second year in a row, I want to say, going to the Montclair Film Festival here in Montclair, New Jersey. It's like maybe like a half an hour south of me, and I went to their one of their shorts block. They had a block of like, I guess maybe it was altogether was like an hour and 20 minutes. And I saw like some of these really interesting shorts. That there was this one short about a 5 or 6 year old girl that really wanted milk and cookies. That's what it was about. But at the same time, it was about her mother, her mom being a single mother and all this other stuff. But it was mainly about the milk and cookies, and it was fucking brilliant.
It doesn't need to be complex. Just needs to be kind of shot well and cohesive.
Yeah.
And I just feel like when you do short films, because you're just doing them yourself, you're not getting a manager to give you notes where you're like, they're not even seeing what's in your mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just frustrating, I think, with the TV part. I'd rather just do film.
Yeah, that's true. It's different. Like, it's just like, I guess it's at this, the way the industry's set up, it's like, you definitely have to do a lot of this stuff yourself. And
where's the time when you're working a day job and doing spots at night?
I know. Like, I feel the same way. It's like, you know, and sometimes I have like auditions after work, and I was talking to my parents about this. I was like, I get up at 4:30. I go to work all day. I get off at 3. Sometimes I have an audition after work. That's another hour of driving. And then you go to the audition, you pay $40 to park sometimes. And then I got to drive back to Jersey. And it's like, oh, then I got to work on my stand up. Then I got a gig, or somebody calls you to do a gig. You're not turning down a fucking gig.
Yeah, it's money.
Yeah, like I was kind of in limbo where before, like I got booked on these shows this weekend. I was like, oh, they were trying to get me at this gig in the Poconos, and I was like, of course, yeah, I'll do it. Then they went with somebody else, and I was like, fuck. Then an hour later, it's like, hey, can you do this gig? I was like, yeah, fuck it, I'll do it. Let's go.
It's a roller coaster ride.
Yeah, going through all these emotions and stuff. So how do you either keep your sanity within all this? You say you go to therapy. You're married,
yeah.
So you're married to Joe List.
Yeah.
And does that help you, like having a partner that's also in the business? Let me ask you about. Yeah, I want to. Okay, so first, I want to ask you, how do you unplug from stand up? And then secondly, what is it like? Like, what do you do for fun unplugging? When then, what also with you being married to a comic, what's that like? Because some people say it can't be done.
I know.
But there's examples of like you, Bonnie, and her husband. And, oh my God. What's Bonnie's husband's name?
Rich Voss.
That's so bad.
She would love that.
Well, she's the first person that I met. She's the first headliner that I worked with. So I always remember her. And I know of Rich. I've seen him around, yeah. But I don't know. And Bonnie, you know, I'm not BFFs with Bonnie, but that's the first person I think of in that relationship.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, so it goes. Works. But speak on that, and then we'll close it out in a bit.
Sure. I've dated other people outside of comedy, mm-hmm. and it just works better to date, I think, within. I understand that it is hard. If you break up, then you're going to have to see that person date other people. But that's never really bothered me.
Yeah.
But I have moved scenes. So I didn't end up dealing with it, but I did have a breakup here in the city.
Okay.
And it didn't bother. And also, a lot of times in New York, you're not even running into people a lot.
That's true,
too. If there's so many people and the scenes are so spread out, like with Brooklyn and then city spots and club spots or bar shows, and then there's so many other rooms that we don't even know about where there's another island of comics. So.
Yeah.
You don't really run into them that much. And I don't know, if you can't accept that your ex is going to be dating other people, then I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Cause there's people at my day job that are married. They're dating. It's, somebody sent the HR sent out an email about that shit, but and we had to do a sexual harassment thing. But yeah, there's people like we worked at UPS at a warehouse, people are probably going to date.
Yeah, I worked in a restaurant for years and everybody was fucking each other.
Yeah.
There can be problematic stuff like that, but to think that that's not going to happen is so stupid because for me, even with friends, the only way that we're going to be friends or dating is if we're in the same place, you know, over and over every week.
Right. Yeah.
And that's where, you know, we're out every night. So if it's not a comic, I'm never going to see them. Like if I just worked a day job, I would never see Joe.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'd be waking up in the morning. He'd be sleeping. By the time I get home, he's heading out.
Mm-hmm.
Then when he gets back, it's 1:00. I'm going to bed. So I just feel like it's better just to date a comic. And then also they get it. If you have to. There's times where we've made plans and then something came up where he got a better job or I got offered something. And it's never been, you know, oh, do you have to take this job? It's always been understood. You take the job, it comes first, and that will make our relationship better.
Yeah, that's real shit.
You just figure out your priorities and make it work. And they just get it. They understand the turmoil that we go through. Or like, you know, I only feel like comics kind of understand what you go through.
Yeah, because it seems like, and then like the two of you are both like very great comics. And so like, is there jealousy ever between the two of you? Like even though...
I'm not going to lie. There was in the beginning for me. Like I remember one time... I had been writing sketch for a few years at UCB, and then we were up for, or like, could we both submitted for Amy Schumer's show.
Mm-hmm.
I had a packet that was, I thought was well written in a scripting application, like Celtex or Final Draft, so it was formatted correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And well thought out beats, and then Joe came in that morning, the day of, and just pounded a few like ideas on a Google Doc and sent it in, and he got a call back.
Oh,
I
shit.
Lost my shit.
Oh,
I was like, you've got to be fucking. kidding me? Where I've known that my sketches worked on stage and I put, like, they got the laughs where they needed, and his were never, like, fleshed out on stage. They were just loose ideas on a Google Doc.
Oh my God.
That one, that's where you realize for stuff like that, it's not, there's no way you're going to get it. They're only hiring you if they know you.
And he was a man, too.
Yeah.
Fuck. Jesus. A white man. Wow.
I know.
Holy shit, that's hilarious.
But I remember being like breaking my pencils. Like, are you serious?
I can picture you doing that.
So, yeah, there's moments like that. But I feel like I've also gotten some stuff now that's made me chill out a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, it's frustrating in the beginning because I am like, there's so many people that are, and they're not getting anything because there's so many comics and that just people just don't know them.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really hard to stand out, I think.
That's true. That's true. So what are you doing like to just like, other than therapy, what are you doing to unplug from all this? Like just do you have any hobbies?
I love TV.
Oh, same. Yep.
I love TV shows. I like working out. I play soccer on Sundays on a team, and so enjoyable. I love going to hang out with friends with there's no comedy involved, like playing games or something.
Yeah. Do you have civilian friends at all?
They're all not in the city anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. They're all living in Texas or like spread out over the country.
Gotcha.
So I don't really. So I enjoy a comic hang if it's not at a club.
Right.
Like if we go to the park or something, I enjoy that. Reading I've gone into, and then I was thinking, because I'm trying not to look at my phone as much, like I'm going back to playing guitar again.
Oh shit. You used to I remember maybe you told a story on Vag about that. You played guitar?
Yeah, I really wanted to get into music before stand up, and okay. Then I played at my high school talent show, and that was so fun, and I thought maybe that would be a route that I could go into, and then I just realized that I was just plateauing, meaning I felt like I was not improving, and my mind just didn't work in the way of writing music or understanding it.
Mm.
That jokes just came a lot easier to me in my mind. It was more of an obsession and mindset than it was music. So that kind of just fell. But I do enjoy learning songs on guitar through YouTube.
Sure. Well, you should do that. You should, like, I think you should pursue it.
My fantasy, I still have a fantasy of, like, is it too late to be in a band?
I mean, look at Bill Burr. Look at Mark Maron. I mean, they're comics. They do that stuff.
That's good. Todd Barry started out as a drummer, I think.
Okay. Okay. You know, maybe you could talk to him. Like, do you ever talk to him about, like, hey, do you know anybody that plays? I'm trying to get back in. I don't think it's too late. Shit. If you're upright,
funny.
It's not too. Fuck that. I would say go for it. If that's something that you want to do, like music, I fucking love. I was talking about it on the show a couple weeks ago. How was it last? God, maybe last week I went to see this band at Brooklyn Bowl, and I was just fucking blown away. I love that shit.
Oh yeah, it takes you away.
Yeah, it's like my favorite. That's my favorite pastime: going to a show to see a band like this. This band called Moonchild, these like LA, this LA based trio. They're like, I don't think they're even, the lead singer just turned 30. And, okay. And they were talking like these three white singer songwriters. They're from I think they went to school at USC. My listeners are getting tired of me talking about this shit, but they're fucking incredible. And like they're talking about, oh yeah, you know, when we were younger we were inspired by like D'Angelo, Jill Scott, Amel, all these like soul singers. And I went to see them at Brooklyn Bowl, and I liked their music, and I knew what to expect, and I was just like, they beat me over the head. They were just so incredible.
Yeah. And doesn't it inspire you?
It does. Yes.
It motivates me in other areas of my life, that it makes me think of story ideas, or like, mm-hmm. oh, I'd like to shoot a video for this song, or
mm-hmm. yeah.
I don't know. I just find like watching other art, I find, can be quite good for your own, I guess we call it self artist.
Yeah. Well, I know, like I had Luisa Diaz on the show a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about, like, I think stand up it's an art form.
It is.
Because we're like, we deal with a lot of insecurities and stuff like that. We don't see ourselves that way, but we are. It is what it is.
Yeah. And we're kind of putting, I guess what you would consider art is kind of like putting a mirror to the audience of mm-hmm. like, you know, thinking outside of the box and making people think. So it does fall under that category for sure.
It's like we just like to shit on ourselves sometimes. Yes. But it is an art. It's like I was telling her. It's like I take this like stand up shit, the acting. I take it seriously so that when the people who come see me don't have to worry about it. Like, you know, you think about them getting babysitters and they get dressed up and they've saved money up. Well, even if you're not like the headliner, they've saved up money. They made plans to come to a show that you're at, and you want to be the best that you can be. Like, I feel like art was put here on, I'm just fucking spitballing this, Sarah.
Yeah.
But like, we were blessed with this craft, blessed with this ability to show what creations like to show to. I think. Fuck. It's like the best way that we can be godlike on earth is to create.
Yeah.
To be like, if, whether you believe in God or not, or whatever it is that you show that you can be for that 15, for that hour, whatever that time is, in between that time, to be as excellent as you can be.
Yeah.
And we got it. A lot of times we fall short, but sometimes there's fucking magic that happens. And that's kind of what we got to live for. Yeah. It's the shit. And, you know, like that. I don't know. That's what we keep. That's why we're fucking doing this, Sarah. And to keep the lights on.
Yeah. I just want people to laugh at hardships of life because it's fucking cruel.
Yeah. Now, do you, because like, and then I guess we'll close with this. What I appreciate about your stand up is like, you can talk about dark stuff. And you're able to do it on a mainstream level when you've been on Colbert, you've been on Corden. Is there something different that you're doing? Are you pulling something different from your toolbox when you're writing for TV? Or is it just like, this joke is just going to start in this organic way. I'm doing it at this club. Oh, hey, Sarah, you got booked on Colbert. Like, what are you thinking about, like, when you come up with the creation of a bit? Did that make any sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right.
I don't really write in the sense, like, I want to write clean jokes. So,
yeah.
If clean jokes come, that's great, and I prefer them. I like them. I it's not like I don't like dirty jokes, but I just feel like it's just easier to do stand up if you have cleaner material.
Yeah.
And I do want to get on TV, so I'm always appreciative if it comes. It is like you say, like I was joking about that last night because I have a lot of dirty jokes lately, and it makes me laugh to think that it's a divine intervention, like a god or one of the gods from above is speaking through me.
Yeah,
they want me to do an eating ass joke makes me laugh. But I mean, how else do you kind of explain sometimes where an idea or when you say something where you're just like, and I'm not religious, but it is kind of like a fun weird magical moment when all of a sudden something comes out of you, out of your brain from an area that you had no idea.
Right.
And it just hits that you're like that should be said on stage. Like,
yeah.
I'll be doing the dishes, and that's where I write the most, is when I'm doing a mundane activity in my house or sure. something.
Yeah.
And if you're just, your brain is wondering, and then all of a sudden you're just like, why did I think of this right now? And then that's where I start writing for. Or if I kind of also try to write from an emotion of, if something's bothering me or why is that weird, then I try to figure out why that's weird. And usually, that's where I think jokes come from.
Yeah. Like, so it's 'cause it's almost like this darkness that you have juxtaposed with the cleanliness of like getting this over. Like you're saying some like really interesting, you're like putting out these truths about yourself, about society, and you're getting them over on mainstream TV. And you're telling, and it's killing with these tourists and mainstream America. You know what I mean? Like,
I always think if you say anything with a smile, you'll get away with anything.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's true.
Counterbalance it with a sweet disposition. But, you know, ranting works too.
Yeah.
It's just like whatever works for yourself. But I do think that you kind of have to have a likability.
Right. Right. That's true.
But I feel like that's changing. I don't want to say any names because it feels really rude, but I actually respect what they're doing, where I'm like, they're not really coming off likable, but there's something punk rock about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like this, like just like some subversiveness, and it's just like real, that's what also interests me too. Like where it's like, I can't think, well, like Class, I don't think, I'm trying to think, was that iPhone joke? That was the one you did. I think I heard it on the Paste magazine.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Clip. And then you're talking about like your husband, like taking. You're like, does this mean anything to me? Like clearing his shit out. Like you're still a hoarder, but he's a minimalist because you threw all his shit out.
Well, yeah, and it's like I was trying to get rid of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like really. It's relatable stuff. And so you're saying like when you do the road, like people are weirded out by stuff like that? Or is that
some of those jokes get like they don't, I don't know. Like when I've done the Uber pool one where I talk about I didn't realize I pressed the pool part on the app, and this really did happen in the very beginning. The driver went to go pick up another person and I panicked because I was like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And I did think for a brief moment I was getting murdered. And then I just thought it was so strange that I didn't even say anything or fight for my life. We're like, God, Sarah, that's horrible. That, I don't know. I was just like, I just blanked. What were we talking about?
Just talking about like how you, like just how people, if you tell a joke that like the crowds were like, oh my God, what is she saying? Or not connecting, you know?
No, when I've done that one, sometimes I'll get a, like rather than a laugh, they'll commiserate with me. One time I had a lady, this was years ago. She was like, I just want to give you a big hug, which I found so insulting.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you can't do too many self-deprecating jokes in a row.
Yeah.
You're like, no, we're supposed to laugh about this stuff. And I'm hoping that everybody kind of has a moment like this.
You got to Nanette yourself out of that.
I got to Nanette myself out. Yeah. Maybe I should start yelling at people in the middle of my act.
Yeah, I was like, Jesus, she was yelling at them. Oh, God.
I was not expecting that in that special.
Yeah. I'm interested in how the new... Well, I've heard about how the new one was.
Was a good one man one woman show.
That's exactly what I thought too, like a very very good one person show. Not really,
I mean,
stand-up.
Yeah, it made me laugh, and then I also did cry because I just hate hearing horrific stories about that, of when people have to deal with such adversity. It makes me sad.
Right. Yeah,
so it was good in that aspect. It was nice to go on a little roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
It was a dramedy.
Yeah.
And that should actually, I'm surprised nobody coined that term. Well, I know it's coined for film and TV, but
I mean,
it should be coined for specials these days. Like Gary Goldman's is kind of a dramedy.
Yeah, it's kind of like got that one man show docu film. Yeah. I think it was filmed by a documentarian, I heard. And it was great. Like, it's just a very good special. Like, it's almost like this hybrid thing where, like, what's the guy, Hasan Minhaj, has his Homecoming King. Like, if he doesn't do any other specials, that was a hell of a fucking thing to put out, what he did. Like, it was
I didn't even, I didn't see that one, but now I'm intrigued. I do like watching different kinds of art or tone with specials these days. I do find it fascinating.
Yeah, I enjoyed that because it did come up, like, because I think he was working on that in the same way that, oh my God, what is wrong with me? Colin Quinn, the way he works out his specials at that theater, Cherry Lane, I believe.
Yeah, well, that's the comedy special, but that's like a special. It'd be interesting to see how that is in a regular club set. Like,
yeah.
Like, I think that way with Mike Birbiglia, like,
of course, yeah.
He's on more of the story. It's still funny. It's still a stand up special. I still consider it stand up, but it does move into the direction of this is more like a theater show.
Yeah, I saw him do one of them at Levity.
Yeah.
And it went over fine. It was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a lot of the stuff is just like, I think when it gets packaged differently because it needs to be catered to a different sensibility or an audience.
Right, right.
I call them NPR audiences.
Yeah, yeah.
And we people that go to theater.
Mm-hmm. And we want those too. I mean, I'm one of those people too. And if I can, you know, get in that tax bracket, I would see more. But yeah, I think everybody's got an audience, and it's just like, it's just like how do you play to all those folks and stuff.
Yeah. Well, now we have social media, so you can get your audience that way.
But shit, if I ever blow up, I'm casting you in some shit.
Oh, thanks, man. So are you. I'm going to do the same for you. In fact, I want to make a short film and put you in it.
Please do. I would do it. I think we'd kill it. You'd have to have my rider. You'd have to have some Reese's peanut butter cups.
I could do that.
And some bottled water. I'm good.
Yeah, I'm all for that.
Well,
definitely.
Well, Sarah, plug some stuff. This will go up in about, maybe this will go up like this next weekend in about a week or so. If you got any shows and your podcasts, all that good stuff.
Well, I'm at Burlington, Vermont next weekend with Joe List.
Okay.
And then just follow me on Instagram. I want more Instagram followers.
Cool. Well, Sarah Tolomash, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks, Chris. This is fun.
You're always a fucking delight.
So are you.
And when you see some indie shit, we'll have you back on the Patreon.
Yeah, sure. I think I'm going to check out I think it's called The Souvenir, and there's a part two coming out soon.
Oh, okay. I'm probably going to see Parasite tomorrow.
Oh, Dan Perlman just told me about that, and then I read it up online, and I thought that the storyline sounded really interesting.
Everybody's going ape shit over it. It's one of those art house movies that, like, a nerd like me would love it anyway. It would be excited to see, but now all these mainstream people are talking about it, so it's like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like when your favorite indie band gets commercialized, you're like, oh no.
It's like, oh fuck you guys, you weren't there when they were whatever.
I know.
All right, Sarah, thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, anytime.
Take it easy, everybody.
All right.